Hey friend, welcome back to Houston Made. This is a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own businesses. I got that wrong so many times in the first season, selfishly. Season two, here we are. We did it. We're back. Welcome. I cannot tell you how excited I am to be back in this chair in front of this microphone recording introductions to these podcasts again. It's just such a good time. Over the last 18 months of producing this show, getting it ready, getting it out into the world, throwing it out there last year, and then taking a break and coming back to it, through all of that, I have just come to find a deep, deep love for this show, the community around it, all of it. I think last season we did 23 interviews with different guests across 32 episodes, and that ran from May all the way into December. And it was a blast. I had so much fun with it. But as I think many things do, it often ends up taking far more time and work than, you know, you think it might. I just got into it and realized, oh, this is a lot. But I went that long, I think, really to prove to myself, maybe to prove to everybody else too, that this is going to be a real thing. This is like a real podcast versus just some, like, I don't know, thing I got interested in for a couple of weeks and then let fall to the wayside. And so went for almost 6 months last year and loved it, but it ended up being a lot. I got into like a week-to-week grind of finding guests, recording the interviews, producing the episodes, doing all the social media stuff. And by the time I'd gotten to the end of the year, I was just like, I'm gonna die. Like, I just need a break. On top of all of that, when I started this, I was just doing residential real estate, but through all of last year, I built a whole second company, Rusty Gates Media, that does videography for business. I mean, honestly, people like our guests, and had done work for a bunch of our guests. And so now by the end of the year, I was running that business, the real estate business, and doing the podcast, and it was a lot. So I was ready for a break over the holidays, got some rest, kind of wrapped my head around some things, and I think figured out a way to do this with a little bit more margin, which I think as entrepreneurs, we all kind of like need to be thinking about how do we keep margin in our lives when our businesses and our passion projects, we are so willing to give so much of our life to. So this season is going to run for 10 episodes, which is 10 interviews, one a week over the next 10 weeks, which is obviously a much shorter season, but hopefully that's more sustainable so that I can produce a couple of seasons a year and not be in such a week-to-week bind, you know, as we get a lot going on. Going into this season, my hope is to create just a greater community around this show. I have loved so many of the friends that I've made and through these interviews, but also through social media and followers of the show. And so my hope is that I can do a little bit better job, create some events, some opportunities to connect you with as listeners to the guests, connect listeners with other listeners. Because as I found on my own entrepreneurial journey, you just have to have community. You have to have other people who are going through the same things you're going through, who've been through the same things that you're going through, to just give you some support and guidance, and it makes it so much better. Maybe not easier, but it definitely makes it better. So if you're interested in keeping up with what I'm able to put together for those kind of community gatherings, whether they're online or in person, the best place to start and to keep up with all that is going to be over on Instagram. So follow the podcast's profile at Houston Made Podcast. Whew. Did you miss my rambling? Because here it is. In this episode, I had the chance to sit down with Megan Silanoff of Mad Meg. It's a creative services firm right here in Houston. And it's just this really cool company that is helping their clients manage social media, develop their brand, and better connect with their target audiences. And when I first connected with Megan last year, I was immediately struck by the unique and really creative vibe of their whole company, if I can say that. And she's built this amazing team team around her, and they've just done some really, really cool work all around town. So listen in as we discuss creating familiarity through identity, how blogging became the launching pad for Megan's career, and why neither of us will ever stop working. Megan Silanoff.
Hello.
With Mad Meg. Thank you so much for being here. Well, I guess this is your office. So
thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to have you on as a guest for season two and to hear about your story and all of the really amazing things that you and your team do here. For people who don't know, can you fill us in on what Mad Meg is and what y'all do here?
Mad Meg is a creative services firm in Houston, Texas, USA, and we specialize in social media management, web design, branding, and public relations. Mm-hmm.
Helping businesses, entrepreneurs, what else? What other clients? Is that kind of the...
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about our business is that it doesn't, I mean, we're applicable to all industries, right? Whether you're in the energy or oil and gas, or I can't think of any industry needs a website, they need marketing. So that's one nice thing about our business is that we can work with anyone. And we do, right? We work with small mom and pop shops all the way up to Fortune 100 companies. And I like that. I think that's one of the things we like about it here is every day is different, every client's different.
Yeah. How would you define branding? I mean, let's just start the most basic level of things.
A brand is literally your name concept, your tagline, your value statement, and then how your brand looks. So the colors, the fonts, and just the cohesiveness on, you know, does your brand look the same on the website as it does your social media, as it does the signage in your office, as it does the marketing collateral you give out at a trade show? It seems obvious, but I'm shocked by how many people don't have that.
Sure.
Really reputable, successful businesses don't have that, right?
Yeah.
So I'd say that's on a very, you know, high level, that's what branding is.
Totally. I think the way that I have understood it, you complimented me on my website, but again, I've had help, and two, I still feel like it lacks a lot, but my understanding approaching all of that and everything to do, whether it's Houston Made or real estate or the video work, is trying to create, familiarity through identity. Right. So it's
much better than what I said. You want to work here? Jeez.
At least that's just, I've got the Hey Friend shirt on. I start every show. And part of that was, habit. It was just, I needed to say something to open every episode, but also it was very common to how I'm already greeting people and then realizing, oh, people like are identifying me with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, listen, I don't have a trademark on Hey Friend here. but it has these layers to it of, like, that's the goal. The goal is friendship. Mm-hmm. And I did some digging. I always try to do a little research for our little Backwoods podcast here. And I read a blog post of yours.
Okay.
2018.
Oh, God. What was it about?
And you had just seen a Dax Shepard performance. She's lights going on. And you were kind of reflecting on the brilliance of his performance, the brilliance of his podcast, Armchair Expert. And in your blog post, you were reckoning that what we're all striving for is connection. And that's what Dax does so well and draws so many people in to listen to this kind of messy conversation about
connection,
being
vulnerability. Do you listen to Armchair Expert?
Occasionally. Okay. There's so many shows out there. It kind of depends on the guest.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I would agree with you. I think that's what he does particularly well. It's a little bit of what I hope this show does. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're talking about businesses and we're talking about entrepreneurship and all of that.
You can do that in regards to entrepreneurship and business ownership, right? Like it's just like having an honest conversation instead of people being in the side of the microphone and, you know, flexing and everything's great and how successful they are, you know.
Totally. But it's that. It's the connection. Mm-hmm. And from my background, again, an only child, my parents were divorced a number of times. And I think I think I'd read that blog post and was like, oh, yeah, no, I agree. That's everything. That's what I do. That's behind Houston Made and real estate and the video stuff for me is connection. So I read that and I thought, oh, like, that's really good.
Well, I think that's important. I think that's why I I think it's why Dax's podcast is so successful. I think it's what draws me and this massive community to it. And I also think you could make the parallel that that's what made me successful at Mad Meg too. I think that's what my differentiator is that I can connect with people.
Yeah.
Right. I can get them to trust me, and I can kind of, because I'm a fellow entrepreneur, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs. I can see their business like mine. I can see how we, you know, I run a very lean business, how we can make the most of their budget. And so I think that's what, I think connection is like so big.
Yeah. And I see that, in your space here. I've seen that in the work that you have done online and how you have presented yourself in the social media space as a person and as a business, but then also that's what you're doing, right? That's what I think that, to maybe bring this full circle with all this rambling already, is that what you're doing is you're helping brands, businesses, companies, individuals relate to and connect with their audience, whoever that might be. And most people, they don't know. It's fascinating that we just assume making friends is like a thing that we all know how to do. And I, as I sit here and think through it, it seems like, no, actually, that's like a skill to develop.
Well, and it's not necessarily everyone's goal to make friends on social, right? Sure. It might be to educate or to sell something. So, you know.
Yeah. But trust, right? I think trust. We would say trust. Yeah. Yeah, I think whatever it is. It's connection. It's your building connection. So before Mad Meg, let's go way back to the beginning. So out of college, you end up selling printers.
Yes.
For Canon.
Copiers.
Sure, that's right.
Yes.
You did an interview a while back and you told that story where you went to a job fair and you were like waiting for your ride.
Mm-hmm.
She was talking to Canon.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone asked you, do you like inside or outside
yeah,
sales?
Yeah, I know what that
before
meant.
Before you knew it, you had a job.
Yeah.
And in one of your blog posts, you said, at the core of every job, whether you're a teacher or an engineer or a stay-at-home mom, are some sort of sales function. And the better you are at those skills, the more successful you'll be in your role in life in general. So obviously you learned a lot of that selling at Canon. What are sales skills? Sales?
I think it's what we were just saying, right? How to connect to people and how to present yourself professionally and articulately and in a trustworthy way so that they want to do business with you. Mm-hmm. I think that's what made me, you know, you're talking about my blog a lot, which was the precursor to Mad Meg. Mm-hmm. I think that, did a lot to set me up for this, right? First of all, just teaching me the skills of what we do here every day, social media, building websites, things like that. And I think because when everyone started blogging, which is kind of when I started as a doing it at the right time, I had the sales background. So I knew how to pitch brands. I knew how to work with brands where I think that really gave me an advantage. I didn't have I probably had the most modest following out of everyone, but because I was more business oriented and knew how to monetize it and to form strategic partnerships. Again, all the stuff that we're doing here, I think that helped me, that just aggregated my, success a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
Even though my following is pretty modest.
It seems like you had a vision for the opportunity, like within it. Cause I had a blog.
Mm-hmm. Everyone did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who hasn't? I remember my first blog. It was 2005 was on Zanga, right? No?
I haven't even heard
no
of it.
No clue. Yeah. Zanga was the precursor to MySpace.
Okay.
MySpace?
Of course.
Great. Yeah, and it was purely text, right? There's no, I don't think there were any pictures, but it was, today I went to class and saw such and such, and he told a joke. And I, probably like the majority of people, did it for a little bit, not knowing exactly why. Maybe because I wanted to be seen, maybe because I wanted people to care about my life and the mundane nature of it all. I still wanted to be like, my friends to engage in it and see it. And then of course I didn't see any results or it wasn't doing anything. I was like, I don't know the point of this. And then I would kind of fall off. You started in blogging and you had a much different like story kind of getting into that. Do you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, I can. I think mine's a little bit, you know, I started blogging my story is pretty weird. I had cancer. I started a Caring Bridge blog after I was in remission. I liked the blogging piece. Yeah. That was my foray into it. So when I first did it, I just did it because I like to write. I think it gave me a sense of community with other bloggers in Houston. And because you get free stuff, right? You got free stuff and merch and in exchange for blog posts. But then pretty soon into it, it started changing. And I think I just saw it as a catalyst to Mad Meg, or a catalyst, you know, using your platform to catalyst to whatever the next thing is, because it was clear that blogging was about to die. My blog was a vehicle to Mad Meg. Mm-hmm. People that I started out with, used it for a catalyst for a lot of other things. I'm in a networking group called Boxwoods Breakfast Club. Mm-hmm. And it started out, like 5-6 years ago, maybe. Probably been longer. And we're all bloggers. And now it's still an active group. We still get together every month. I don't think anyone blogs anymore. But we've all used these blogs to pivot and do something with it. Mm-hmm. So it's always really interesting to go to those and see what everyone's up to.
Yeah, how far everybody's come.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, before we started recording, I had mentioned working at the staffing firm, and I got there, and I remember really early on, one of my coworkers asking, like, "Well, what's surprising to you?" Like, just kind of checking in the first week, like, "How's it going?" And one of the questions she asked was, "You know, what's surprising to you about what we do?" Or
it's a good question.
Yeah,
I have a new hire this week. I should ask her that.
Yeah, and what I remember surprising me was the fact that it was just us, like people just doing things and getting paid to do it. And that maybe that's not as profound of an insight as it felt like in the moment. But at the time, there were maybe 20, 25 employees at the company. It had only been around for maybe 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Gone from one person, right? Card table in a garage to now 25 people with an office in Rice Village. And it was something. And it kind of baffled me that you could just organize people around a task and accomplish these things and get paid to do it. And obviously that's why we call it an organization. Again, maybe these are not profound realizations, but it was a moment right then that was like, oh, okay, well, and this is like a successful business. So if you want to start a successful business, that's it. It's have an idea. Bring people around that idea, sell that idea in one way, shape, or another. And then you did it. Like, and then you're in the club. Okay. So then blogging evolved into Mad Meg.
Yes.
How did that happen?
I got divorced. So I was blogging, I was writing books, and I knew I was going to get divorced. And I knew if that was going to happen, I was going to need to bring home some more bacon. And so the show Mad Men was ending. I love that show. My name is Megan. So I had the idea just to brand myself. I made a website, and I got one I had one client. I realized if I get another one, I might have something here. I did get that other one, and it just kind of, you know, exactly what you said. Started off in at a kitchen table in a one-bedroom studio apartment. And that was about 6 years ago.
6 years.
Six, seven, or maybe closer to seven. Seven this summer.
Yeah.
Seven in July, I think.
Does that feel like a long time, or is it both and? Is it short and long?
Yeah, both.
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
How did you get those first clients? So you had your website. Did it come from the website? Somebody already knew?
A lot of the contacts I had were because I was a blogger, right? So I worked with a lot of PR firms in town as a blogger, so I knew them. And so that was helpful for me. So when I got my own clients, I could pitch the PR firms. So that definitely helped. Being an influencer helped. I was established and knew people. So that I think that was my biggest thing I had going for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think seeing those opportunities, that makes a really big difference of being able to identify where could this go, whether it goes there or not. I feel that's what I'm always thinking through as well. Maybe this could turn into these 12 things. And I think to my wife's chagrin, sometimes I'll share those ideas, and I think it overwhelms her at times because she thinks I'm going to try to do all 12. And it's like, no. Just like kind of looking down the road and seeing where this path might lead. And maybe any of those will work out. Maybe none of them will work out. And either way, like that's fine, right? We'll just we'll see how it goes. So when you took those first couple of clients, I mean, how much of this did you envision? Was this
none? I mean, literally nothing. I was just trying to, I don't even know what I was trying to do. Pay my rent.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, for the first year or two, even maybe 3 years, I don't know if it, there was even a, you know, maybe 3 year or three.
By then,
we had something. But yeah, I was just trying to get through the day, you know, and pay the rent. And it wasn't until more, you know, later into it where you're like, okay, long term, this is, you know, stopped surprising me that there was still an office to come to every day. And thought about, you know, how are we going to grow this thing? How are we going to aggregate the growth? How are we going to build a team? That whole thing.
Yeah. Was there, do you know when it stopped being surprising that there was still an office?
I would say still no. I mean, it's still never, it's still, it's not, so, it's kind of like what you said. It's, we've been doing this almost 7 years and it feels like it was just yesterday and it feels like, you know, a million years ago. And I think that same thing about, you know, what we're doing now. Like I can't believe it. I can't believe that we're here and this is happening. And also I can, because, you know.
You put in the work.
Because
you,
you know,
have put in the hours to know that it, you've built this thing. 4:30
today, and that's, you know.
Yeah.
Always have to, there's always seasons of that where it's like, you know, I have to go back to getting up at 4:30. So, yeah, I'm surprised and not surprised.
Sure. Was there a client that you wrote that, a notable client along the, like, the beginning of that journey?
Yeah, Market Street was our first, what I always say, like, our big girl client, getting into Market Street. That was a really big deal for us. And since then, there's been, you know, a bunch where I can't believe, and it's really exciting to work with, for different reasons, right?
Yeah.
Like, whether, I don't know if I should say this, but where I think we're about to get, like, Bolritos. Like, I've never even had Bolritos, but I think it'll be our first, like, corporate chain that we've worked with. So I'm looking forward to that, right? Other people, you know, Woofy Swim School, that's where my daughter learned to swim. So that's cute, but that's not, you know. So different things, excited about different clients for different reasons.
Certainly. That makes, I mean, perfect sense. And I feel the same way with real estate. Sometimes it's like, oh, this is a big deal, or it's a fun transaction. And then with the video stuff, it's the same. Whether it's, oh, this is a creative idea that I want to do, or it's like, these are just people that I really, really want to work with. And they're awesome.
It's always changing, like, what a good client is. You know, I think it used to be like the sexier, the better. Like, we used to be at River Oaks District or Suit Supply or these really cool, you know, really sexy, neat brands.
Yeah.
And now it's like we're getting to the point where, you know, we have a title company and we have a ear, nose, and throat doctor. And sometimes those are more fun. And I don't know if they're necessarily more fun, but they're
fun in a different way.
Yeah, they're fun in that we don't have to work on the weekend and they're not texting us on a Saturday night. And they, you know, it's our, who we like to work with and why is also, it's constantly evolving.
And when we talk about evolving, how much has your role changed, right? Obviously, back in the day, it was you, and you did everything. And now you've got a team here. How many people do you have on the team?
I have, there's 5 full-time employees, including myself.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we've had more. But yeah, that's where we're at today. My role, you know, I have dual role. I'm the creative director, so I'm kind of like seeing everything before it goes out the door, and expediting and decide what goes when. And then also daily operations, right? Whatever needs to get done that no one else has time to, that's on my plate as well. So that's what I'm doing.
And I'm sure in that you've had to give away certain things.
We
right? I mean, right in that y'all did, I mean, last year you had some of your stats, you did 4.3 million Instagram impressions. You did made 6,500 Instagram posts and stories.
Wow.
And then had a ton, like tons and tons of impressions beyond that, the stats. But even if we just look at the 6,500 posts and stories, you can't be doing that all.
Oh no, I didn't do any of those. Not a single one. No, that's true. I did some, but no, that Aaron runs our social department. We have three strategists, and that's all them.
And so, but at the beginning, you had to be doing some of that, right?
When yeah, you definitely.
Out, you had to be posting and scheduling and writing copy, I assume, and doing all of it.
Yeah.
Was it hard to let go of that, or were you happy to let go of it?
No, I don't think it. I think maybe, maybe it was harder for me to delegate when I first started. But now, no, not at all. Now I feel like it's the opposite where I can't, you know, it's Taylor's second day and I'm already teaching her things that, you know, I've never even given it away. So, no, I don't think it's hard. It's not hard for me to delegate anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one more thing that you just get practiced at, mm-hmm. and you realize how to have faith in people. But I also assume that has to do with the team that you have hired around you.
Yeah. And I also feel like they're not set up to fail. Right. So like I'm going to see it before it goes out the door. So in most things. So there is really it's not high stakes, you know?
Yeah, it'll be okay.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Final approval and all mm-hmm. of that. I know in my own business with real estate, I had such a hard time giving things away. And then I had to. I got to a point where I literally can't maintain all of this, do a good job for my clients, and start the podcast and run a videography business and et cetera, and be a dad and a husband and all of that. And so I had to learn to do it. And it was really challenging. And I think it did come down to finding people that I really trusted. It was like, oh, you're... And then once I found those people, it's like, oh, y'all do a better job than I do. Mm-hmm. Which was like, did hurt my pride a little bit. My ego didn't love that. But also, it was like, that's fine. If that means it's...
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, especially, you know, I think they can do everything better than I can. You know, I can do what I do well. Mm-hmm. And I'm the best at that. And they're the best at what they do. Like, I have to delegate to Erin because she knows how to do it better than I do, or she knows how to do it. You know, we're getting to the point where I don't know how to do everything, and I think that's okay. You know,
yeah.
I think that's the right direction to go in.
Yeah, you said it around 3 years in, you started setting some goals, and then you started saying, okay, now I have a bigger vision for what this could be. So how do we grow, aggregate mm-hmm. all of that? Is there a 10, 20 year? Idea at this point, or
yes,
is
it I better not be here in 20 years. 60 or what? Yeah, to be retired in 20 sure. years. No, I have some like, you know, what do we want to do in sales next year, or mm-hmm. you know, how, but I definitely have some goals and how what the next phase is for Mad Meg. But I don't want to be working in 20 years, no.
Yeah. What would you be doing after all this? After you built this amazing company, it's super successful. Maybe you're getting royalties or dividends or whatever it is that you get after building a super successful company.
I don't know. You know, I want to do something, it's probably something related to what I'm doing now.
I take it you as the kind of person, and I say that because I'm this kind of person, is that, like, I think I'll work until the day I die.
Yeah.
And I don't think work is a dirty word.
Me either.
So finding some other creative way to.
Maybe got another book in me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine having like an hour to myself. I don't even know what I would do. Mm-hmm. I want to travel, all the things that people say that they want to do. But I don't know. I always say like in college, I didn't even know, you know, what my job was going to be when I was in college didn't even exist. Sure. So who knows what will be happening. Yeah.
When the robots serving us our martinis.
Exactly.
Do you rest well?
No.
A vehement no.
No. No, it's I'm not good at that.
Partially because you don't have an hour to yourself. So mm-hmm. some of that is, and I obviously, your life hasn't happened by accident. So mm-hmm. you've made choices that mm-hmm. keep yourself busy. And mm-hmm. I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. I structure my time because that's how I want my time. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't want it that way bad enough, I would probably change it.
Mm-hmm.
But so is it, some of it is that, or is it, what's the disconnect on
why I can't
rest?
Rest?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an Enneagram 3 or type A or however you want to say it. I'm very results oriented. I think that's probably, you know.
So this rest better accomplish something.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
If I'm going to rest.
If I'm going to take it, how can this be the most productive nap that I've ever taken? or like if I sit down to watch a show, I have to, I don't know, do something, organize. I don't know. It's very hard for me to sit still. I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
But I think just like anyone else, your strength is also your weakness, right? And so it's helped me, but it'd be nice if I could relax a little bit more.
Yeah. I mistyped as a 3 for a long time. I'm a big fan of the Enneagram. I started reading about it back in 2010. That's my flex. I'm a social butterfly. Some would say a social climber. And I've always been that way of just being like, who can I be friends with here? Mm-hmm. Who do I want to be friends with here? And that I think can look a little bit like a 3 sometimes from the outside. And so I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But then when I was working at the staffing company, one of my good friends who knew the Enneagram well was like, you pride yourself on putting 73% effort in this job and having the best numbers on the team. A 3 could never do that. And I was like, oh.
So what number did he say that was?
He was like, I really think you need to look at the 7, which I had.
The enthusiast?
Yeah, I had decided.
You seem like you could be a 7.
I'm a 7 through and through. But I had decided in 2010 when I first read it, I was like, 7s? No, ugh, gross, yeah. That's not me.
Yeah.
Flighty? No, I'm not flighty. I'm passionate. It's different. And but helping to know those things and mm-hmm. say, this is how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. It does help, I think, when it comes to how you engage with rest. Because how you engage with rest is not how a 9 is going to engage right. with rest. Somebody who's motivated by peace and tranquility right. and keeping the status quo.
Right.
It's like the opposite of how you're wired.
Right.
So yeah. If you're not resting, quote unquote, as the culture would have us, mm-hmm. I don't know, spend 20 minutes in downward dog or something. Do you have practices that recharge your batteries, or how do you? Do you know who Peter McKinnon is? He's a YouTuber. Okay. He's a YouTuber, videographer, photographer. And he just released a video this week and he's massively successful. And he just released a video this week about setting up his leather working shop in his garage again. And this, he had been doing that, 15 plus years ago. And then it failed. He made this big sign for it, went to the markets and did all that stuff. And then it just didn't become what he wanted it to be. And now, again, you never know what life is going to do. And
right.
now he's this massive YouTuber. And one of the things he was saying in this video was, it's the reason why he's setting it up. He's like, it's good to have a thing that's not your thing. Right. Like, so I think you asked, well, what is Houston made? In some regard, this is my thing that's not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so maybe it is kind of, I don't know where my thing is, but it's a thing that I get to do that wasn't real estate related. It wasn't directly videography related. And I love doing it. So I wonder if maybe that's what you have.
No, I don't have a thing. That's not my thing. I've been meaning to get a hobby. I think that's another way of saying a hobby or some sort of outlet. No, I don't have one. I don't. I've been meaning to get one. I am a mom. I started dating someone in the last year. So that, I hadn't done
that's a hobby.
Yeah, I hadn't done that in a really long time. So that
takes energy, it takes money. Yeah. But that's
right.
A hobby.
It does take all of those.
My hobby is dating right now.
So yeah, maybe that's what my hobby is dating this person.
That's awesome. Yeah. And presumably and hopefully that brings you life. Like that maybe recharges you a little bit.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I think it does. I don't know if this recharges me, but I'm obsessed with, I'm an armchairy, so I'm obsessed with Dax's podcast and just podcasts in general. I mean, there's probably like 4 or 5 that I have weekly that are like, do not miss.
And where do you listen to podcasts?
Like what app?
No, well, oh. I mean like in your life, because again, that's assuming that's
if I'm in the car, if I'm in the car, anytime I'm at home, I'm washing dishes, like I it's kind of replaced my TV I prefer a podcast now.
Well, and that makes sense to the 3. How can this be the most productive dishwashing that I can do?
Exactly.
I'm going to edify myself right. And I'm going to scrub this plate. You said earlier that you had pivoted
mm-hmm.
Out of blogging because you knew blogging was dying.
Mm-hmm.
Is it dead?
Yes.
So like anyone watching right now, they should not start a blog.
No, I mean, it depends on what are you doing it for? I mean, I wish I still had a blog I'm so glad I had a blog in terms of like, I have those pictures. Well, yeah. I don't know. I keep getting emails that I need to update my photo bucket account, but, I love that I have 5-year piece of my life, especially a really important piece of my life when I had just adopted my daughter and watching her. I love that that's documented and I can go back and look at those pictures and read about what I'm feeling. So if you're doing it for you, if someone's blogging for them, of course. But if you're trying to become an influencer and do a sponsored post within the first week of you doing this, like, you know, I'm going to roll my eyes.
Because it's not going to happen.
Well, it's just, it's the bubble is burst, right? Like, that's the whole thing about blogging was that, you know, and why it's burst is that the supply and demand. And now there's, everyone's a blogger. So if this particular blogger says they were not, you know, they don't want to work with a brand or work with us or one of our our clients, okay, we'll get someone else to do it. You know, it's just, it's completely different. Blogging's good for SEO. Mm-hmm. So if someone was, you know, I think those would be the two reasons why I would say, yeah, well then do it. If you're just trying to work on your SEO or if you're just doing it for your, you know, for personal reasons. But if you're trying to like become an influencer, you know, I don't know that that's the best way to go about it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I was writing blogs. I learned, we had mentioned earlier, Holly Tate, of Statesman Beverage Company. Statesman, her partner, Bob, was a guest on the show season one. Holly also co-runs that. I need to have her on here one of these days. But she taught me so much about inbound marketing because mm-hmm. we worked together at this company. And we were all tasked. Every employee at the company was tasked with writing a certain number of blog posts a year. It was a part of our job mm-hmm. description. We had to turn them in and we mm-hmm. had to do it. And then that gave the company this huge supply of content for mm-hmm. SEO, but also just setting ourselves as thought leaders. And when I gotten into real estate, I started writing because that's what I knew to do from her. It's like, well, we got to put something on this website. That the other thing too is that what I found when I got into real estate was that I spent a lot of time building what I thought was a beautiful website. In retrospect, I've gotten some feedback that said that it was not very attractive, but I thought it was a really beautiful website. I spent all this time building this website and playing video games and wondering like why the clients weren't coming. And what I realized is essentially I had built a billboard like in a forest. Mm-hmm. Like, well, there was nothing to take anybody by mm-hmm. this billboard to then see my services. And so then blog posts, I was like, well, okay, here's something that I can put on the website that then I can share on social media and hopefully that will push people that way. And I don't think people read anymore.
No, they definitely aren't. And if anything, it's just more content on your website that people aren't going to read. That's going to distract them from what you do want them to read, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have five things on your website. If you have three things on your website or five things, if you only have three things, they're going to retain more. So, mm-hmm. like, why are you putting a blog that no one's going to read anyway? That's just going to distract them from what you're trying, whatever your call to action is. Yep. You know?
Yeah. In retrospect, it was just back then. I think to tell my wife I did something. It's like, well, I know I don't have any clients, but I did write a blog post. Yeah, it's very nice. And I wonder if sometimes it's just like in business, it's just like that, right? It's just like, all right, we got to do something. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't know what it is, like take mm-hmm. a step in a direction. It might not be profitable. It might not turn any kind of result, but at least it was a thing that you did. And maybe that will get you to the next step that will become or something or do something for you at all. But from blogging, you also did, you started the Houston Blogger Symposium. So this like collection of bloggers, right?
Oh yeah.
So this was, what, tell me about this. Cause I'm fascinated by, I'm really excited to sit with somebody who I think has that similar eye for opportunity to be like, I don't know, we could just do this. Let's try this.
Yes, I don't even really remember what that was. I know I did it with Ashley from Sugar and Cloth and Esther Friedman, who still owns Cute Head Kids. I don't remember. I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
An event,
I think. It seemed like
The Houston Blogger Symposium?
Yeah.
Oh, that's something different. I do know what the Houston Blogger Symposium is. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about something else. The Houston Blogger Symposium was a blogger conference I put on because I was going to all these blogging conferences across the country. I went to like Blogger in New York, and I think I went to Alt Summit in Salt Lake City. And I was like, why do I have to go all the way to these random, like, why isn't there a blogging conference in Houston? And so I put one on myself. Yeah. I think I got four sponsors. I did it at the Zaza. I front the money. Looking back, I can't believe I did that, but I guess I did it.
You pulled it off.
So I had a good
time. Was it profitable?
No idea. I don't remember. profitable. I can't imagine it was super profitable. I'm sure I like covered my expenses. But it was a good event. I remember after the event, I was like, I can't believe I just did that.
Well, and I bet it was one of those things, like I call this show indirectly profitable. Like this show has just cost me a lot of money.
Yeah.
I just poured a lot of time and money into this show. But again, the opportunities that have come from sitting here, whether it's relationships with the guests or relationships with listeners who then that turned into a thing or whatever. My bet is that it was probably...
Yeah, right. And it was a huge event. And what do we do here at Mad Meg, right? That's one of our four verticals is putting on an event. So yeah, it's definitely worthwhile. I think it gave me confidence. I think it was a good experience.
How do we feel about conferences?
I haven't been to any in a long time.
Yeah, I guess. I sometimes forget that the world is
blogging conferences or just conferences in general. Oh, it's a general question. I don't know. I went to ICSC, a few years in Vegas, and I had a good time.
Good time.
I think conference. It just depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to meet people and do biz dev, and it can be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just interested in your take on that because one of the things I'd love to see in the future is trying to create more of a community around this show. Connecting listeners with guests and trying to bridge that gap a little bit, and then just to strengthen this community. And Houston is such a wonderful place for me to do this show. It works because there are so many entrepreneurs here and it is such a tight-knit community. From the time that I entered your office to got to like your private office, I think we talked about five or six people that we mutually know.
That's what I love about Houston. I think why I've been able to do Mad Meg, right, is I always say that like in Houston, it's oatmeal and gas town, so you can be a big fish in a small pond. If I was trying to start a creative services firm, and especially with a PR element in like New York or LA or Chicago, I think it'd be so much harder and so much more competition. And I think a lot harder to develop press contacts.
Yeah.
But Houston, the creative community is relatively small. Mm-hmm. And so you can navigate it quicker.
Yeah. And it's grown a lot. I feel like that comes up on this show a lot of just how much the city has changed in the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. Because it was just this oil town.
Mm-hmm.
And you had these tiny little pockets of creativity that have really boomed and grown, and now there's you can really drive to any part of this very massive city and there's cool stuff happening even in the burbs. I talk about that like it's some of my guests that like we have a microbrewery, I think it's smaller than that, nano brewery. Yeah. Andrew Mitchum was a guest on season one and he's like in our neighborhood and that's like crazy to me. I live in like Jersey Village area, so it's fascinating to be like, oh, it's growing and it's popping. Are you from Houston?
No.
Not from Houston. Where are you from?
I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah. When did you come to Houston?
I came, I don't know, like 12 years ago?
I don't know, sometime
in
the past.
At some point.
Who keeps track?
Yeah, I think I've been here around 12 years. 40, seems about right. 28, 40, yeah. Let's go with that. Final answer.
Sure. How has the city changed from your perspective, or how has your relationship with the city changed? Did you like Houston when you got here?
I did. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, so I was just so happy to be out of the snow and the monotonous gray skies, and still am. I don't know how my relationship has changed. I think I've just been here longer. I feel like it's home now, you know? I lived in the medical center when I first lived here, and now I'm out at Memorial. I think I just, continue to feel more at home here. Like, this is my home.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Houston has a way of, I think, sucking you in. Because, and I've talked about this before, but I mean, I was raised to hate Houston. So I was raised in Dallas. So it was just bred into me that like Houston sucks.
Yeah.
And then when I moved here, a lot of those judgments proved true. I
was like,
oh no, this infrastructure is awful.
Like, yeah.
This is not good.
And
these zoning laws or lack thereof are insane. Like
just
stuff is just everywhere.
Yeah.
But then it just, at some point
it
turns.
It's good character.
It builds character and then it does. It makes it really unique is that, to my point of, there's really cool stuff happening, whether you're in Sugar Land or in Cypress or in the Heights or in Montreal, like that you can be anywhere and there's stuff. And that's, I think, a part of the way that that has come from the seeds that they planted and being like, I don't know. Go for it.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? What do you want to build? No, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. and I just love it for those reasons. I want to talk about one of the guiding principles of Mad Meg. I think that something that is on the wall behind you here, you have this quote on your website from Don Draper, the character, the lead character from Mad Men, the show. And he says, clients don't understand that their success is reliant on standing out, not fitting in. Obviously, you heard Don say that and you're like, yeah, that's it. Did you already know that? Were you already on a journey of discovering that? Or was that you watched the show and were like, now I get it?
I mean, I think I probably knew and thought that on some level. Sure. But I think it was probably Don that articulated it in that way that made me be like, yeah, I like that. That resonates with me. So that's what I would say to that. But I always think that, I don't know.
Were you always one to stand out? Has that just been a part of Megan from little childhood?
Do I stand out? I don't necessarily think so.
When I've seen your brand last year and started looking into who y'all were and considering y'all as guests for the show, I think it is true that y'all are different.
Oh, I see what you're... Yeah, so now we're talking about the Mad Meg brand, maybe is what you're talking about. Yeah, I think we're... Yes, I think our brand
how
is...
How much that aligns with you personally?
Like, where you and the brand does, yes. Me and the brand are very... because our brand is very provocative. It's irreverent. It's doesn't take itself too seriously. And I think that's exactly who I am, right? You can take your situation seriously without taking yourself seriously. And I think I do that as a person. And I think we do that as a company. But I think, and I think maybe some, I don't know, maybe we've lost some opportunities or people haven't reached out because of that. But, you know, I think that's usually okay. I think the people that can, we end up with people we're going to be a good fit with.
Yeah.
You know?
I think you have to be... And I don't know you very well, but I think it has to line up with you, right? For it to be for this to all be born.
Yeah.
It has to be, this is who I am. And I love what you had to say about taking your situation seriously, but not yourself seriously. Mm-hmm. Obviously, having gone through cancer and that whole process.
That I think that's where, I think that idea was born. That was probably like it sounds like something I didn't make up. It sounds like probably some tchotchke in the MD Anderson like gift shop or something. But it's true, right? And I started saying it during cancer, and I think it's works. It's equally applicable to Mad Meg or anything else. You know, anyone who takes themselves seriously or has any sort of pretension, like I just can't.
I wholeheartedly understand.
They're not in on the joke, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's been one of my big. Journeys is, I had a coworker, she was a little bit older than me, and she was like, Rusty, you really just kind of have like a little brother syndrome. Like, I may have been older than her. She was like, you just kind of like are constantly poking at people and just messing around. I was like, yeah. And part of that is like, maybe it's because I'm an only child and I'm just desperately looking for, again, connection and family. And it's like, this is how I know how to be and try to engage you and bring some levity to the situation. Then stepping into the business world, I always felt a really deep insecurity around that, around my playfulness, around my youthfulness, and more now entering my mid-30s, finding myself to not be the youngest one in the room, but refusing to give up my backwards cap and my t-shirts and my skate shoes and just saying like, yeah, this is like who I'm going to be. And it took a long time in my real estate business to embrace that because I felt like I was like, button-up shirt, even though I thought it was killing me. And it was my wife who's like, if you don't feel comfortable, they're not going to feel comfortable. You need to get past that. And if, again, if they don't want to work with you for that reason, like you probably weren't going to, it wasn't going to be a great relationship to begin with. So I do. I think owning some of that, however you are, I think is a really big deal. And I think our businesses naturally take on our shape or our essence or our vibe or however you want to say it because we put so much of ourselves in them. How could they not?
Yeah. Well said. Yeah. I think it's been, hard internally. It's, I don't know, hard's the right word, but, deceiving it sometimes, like with interns or new hires, they'll come in and I do have this huge piece of art that says fuck on it, or, you know, we'll be, I use that word. That's one of my favorite words. Or there is sort of a very casual culture around here, right? Where if we're not seeing clients, we're dressed casually. And I think they think that, you know, that the culture is casual. And it's like, no, the culture might be casual, but the work ethic or the pace here is anything but, right?
Yeah.
And so I think people have been mistaken by that. Like, oh, it looks like everyone's having fun and games here, but really we're busting ass. And so we've had to work on that or be very clear, explicit about that when people come in. Like, look, we're having fun. It looks like it might be looking like we're having fun, and we are, and there are, you know.
Yeah.
We get to do fun photo shoots or grand openings, but like, make no mistake, we are, it's a fast pace and we're working.
Yeah. And you're going to be held hard to a high standard.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And not just for the sake of a high standard, but for the sake of doing great work.
Yeah.
And believing that what you do matters. And
yeah.
Yeah. I respect that. I totally understand of having, I had interviewed some people for a couple of different roles and I was like, yeah, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And you know, how do you tell somebody that they're like, well, why? I'm like, because I don't think that you could keep up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. That's, well, and again, just because you're working hard doesn't mean you can't have fun in the process. Are you familiar with Abraham Hicks?
No. Should I be?
Yeah. But it,
fine. That's fine. I think fine.
The idea is just that like you have to enjoy the journey to enjoy the destination. Mm. So like this idea that you're going to like get to somewhere and be really happy. But you, or like this idea that you're going to work through the journey, be miserable in this journey, but then get to this destination and be really happy. Like it doesn't work that way. You have to enjoy the journey to enjoy the destination.
And Abraham Hicks says that?
Yes. Well, in a much more articulate way than I just that was did. Really good. So although I just realized like the idea that just popped in my head was like working out. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like if you work out really hard, you're not going to necessarily enjoy that, but you might enjoy the product of it. So I don't know if that applies, but I guess you could argue you do.
Well, bro, because as somebody who is a sporadic fitness enthusiast, as I'm going to tell,
sporadic fitness
and then I'll work out 3 times in 2 weeks, and I tell my wife like, "You see it?
Sounds a lot like
no, you don't." But as a sporadic fitness enthusiast, I think that it's the motivations, right? Yeah. My wife gets up at like 3 a.m. to work out and do all the stuff she needs to do before she gets out the door. And I know that at the beginning, she didn't love it. And her motivations weren't great either. They were negative motivations. I don't like this. I don't want this, da-da-da. And therefore, she hated working out. And then going through the programs she went through and getting involved with the fitness communities that she was a part of, I think they changed the mindset.
Yeah.
And I think I still struggle with that with fitness because I don't have...
You just did it. You did it. And so because so then she started to enjoy it. And so that's how she got to the destination.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. And why she would enjoy the destination.
Yeah.
Because I think that if you are working out because you have body dysmorphia, like so many of us do, because we live in the world that we live in, you'll never get to the point where you're like, oh, now I'm like, I'm experiencing true contentment over my six pack.
Yeah.
I imagine, just a theory, because I've never gotten there, so I wouldn't know. But I imagine that if that was my motivation, which often is when I start one of my, like, I'm going to do it. It's like I saw some movie, some guy looked jacked, and I was like, that's going to be me. I'm going to go work out my 3 times. My bet is if I kept going and I did get the abs, I wouldn't be happy.
Yeah.
Because the motivations weren't great.
Yeah.
So I'd say, yeah, it probably applies. But I wholeheartedly agree. And I think that there are times you can do things for a season that you don't enjoy. You have to.
Totally.
And by no means will you enjoy every bit of the journey.
Of course not.
But I've talked about how I probably will continue to grow the videography business and keep my real estate license and help the clients that I want to help and my friends and who I already have relationships with. But I don't really intend to scale that business.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of it is not because I don't like real estate, but because the headaches that go along with the videography business, I prefer over the headaches that go with the real estate business. Whether it's like the difference between like a sinus headache or a caffeine headache, it's just that things go wrong in both. There are struggles and hardships in both. And yet if I had to pick, I would rather deal with the videography issues than, you know, people yelling at me over real estate stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you have to enjoy it. Who should be reaching out to you? If there's a business owner, entrepreneur that is listening and they're like, I don't know if I could use Mad Meg services, how would they know that they need to reach out to you?
If they're not sure if their website's good or if their social media presence could use some work. If they don't know if they have a good brand, I'd say any of those people.
Yeah.
It would be, we could have a talk.
And what would happen then? Would you have like a consultation?
Yeah, we just have an exploratory call. I usually tell, you know, I usually ask people to tell me where they've been, where they are now, and where they're trying to go. And I can, you know, jump in and interject at any time and see if MadMag might be a good fit to get them there.
Cool. That's good. And then is there any advice that you would give to Meg of 7 years ago?
Oh.
Or whenever all of this was kicking off?
I like that one. I think just that you know, that
invest
I...
Invest in crypto.
What? Yeah. Invest yeah, in crypto. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think Megan 7 years ago is the same person that needs it. Not just like, you got this, like you can do this, you know, just to believe in myself.
Yeah.
Trust myself.
Well, I think Meg of 7 years ago should certainly trust herself because I think you've built something really, really cool here. Thanks. And it's been a joy to get to sit down with you and hear a Likewise. Little bit about your story. And I wish we could talk for a lot longer, but I know you have a lot of work to do. So we will certainly push people your way. And yeah, thank you so much.
No, thank you, Rusty. This has been awesome.
Season 2, we did it. We're back. A huge thank you to Megan for this interview, and a huge thank you to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. It was such a joy to sit down and get to talk with Megan. So if you are a business owner or an entrepreneur, and you're not sure if your website is awesome or effective, or if you don't know what to do on social media, or you just need someone in your corner to help elevate your brand, reach out to Meg and her team. You can learn more on their website at madmegcreativeservices.com. And if you haven't done so already, go follow them on Instagram at @WeAreMadMeg, all one word. This is your first time tuning in. I have a whole nother season for you to listen to right now. It's out there. It's available. And my goal in picking guests was always to show you can basically do anything in this world. So we've had guests from all kinds of industries, including tattoo artists, leather workers, realtors, and brewery owners. Whatever you're interested in, there's probably something out there for you. So go check out one of those shows. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at @RustyJGates or the show at @HoustonMadePodcast. Let's be friends. It'd be awesome. Houston Made is produced and edited by me, Rusty Gates. Special thanks goes out to Luke Bronner with Milieu Media for continued support of the show and to Mac Ryan Creative for collaboration on our artwork. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories, by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit MilieuMedia.com. Until next week, bye, friend.